Okay, great. Okay, we're being recorded. So if I can't find how you actually listen to these, I will ask if anybody else kept that. So.
Okay, yeah, I have a... I'll do a search in my email for anything as far as recording goes, and we'll play it back tomorrow morning when I get to the office.
Okay. So I think, you know, we have to talk about JSM a little bit. We need to refine our goals, and but we need to Michael to help with that and parcel out the work, and I don't think we can schedule the next phone call without you, Phil. So we may pick some dates, and I'll just go ahead and send them out to people if that sounds okay to everybody.
I think that's
okay.
Good.
Yeah. Are we thinking about the next phone call being sometime February?
I don't know. That'll really be up to the people who are going to be doing the work.
Okay.
I know that I'm going to be gone a great deal in February, but I don't need to be involved since I don't know anything about the simulation. I just thought I would do this to get us, you know, back on track. So we're done.
Phil, I suspect it's you, me, and Michael who are going to be working on the simulation. So we probably
want
to make sure we've got a time that we can do, and then Marjorie can decide if she wants to be in on it too, or whether her hands are too full of other things.
I probably can be support, but that's probably about it, because I'm kind of like Candace. I'm not sure how much help I can be. I've done some simulations, and I'm sort of familiar with the data, but I don't think that I'm going to be able to participate. I've got some other projects that I'm working on, and with the data collection and trying to get an article out and some other things, my plate's full.
Right.
What section did they just announce? Was it 2? 3. They did? Okay. Oh, I'm going to have to go, guys. They just called my board, and I apologize for this. But
In general, Phil, is a Tuesday good for you?
Yeah, typically Tuesdays are good for me. It was just a long weekend. We decided to head out. So,
hey, guys.
Hi, Michael.
I'll be back tomorrow.
Okay, so Phil's got to go because he's got to get on his plane, but the rest of us are here, I think.
Okay, great.
Okay, I'll go. All right, I'll talk to you all later.
Have a good flight.
I should have been asking him how long it took him to get through security days. It sounds like it's taking longer to get through security at airports.
Okay, let's see. Michael, the call's being recorded. You're there, right?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks.
Okay, good.
Sorry for the late ad. I was engrossed in something I was reading and totally forgot about the time. So,
yeah.
Luckily,
I do that
it was only
time.
A few minutes late. It could have been worse than that. So,
so what I think, did you hear what Michelle said, that she figures that you and Phil and she will be doing the majority of the work? So that we need to make sure when we schedule the next phone call that, you know, the three of you are able to do it. And Tuesdays are good for Phil. How about for you?
That's fine for me.
Okay.
I have a couple classes on Tuesdays, but I can fit it in between stuff. So.
Okay.
That's
and Michelle,
fine. And
how about you?
Sounds like that makes sense for the three of us to be doing most of the work.
Yeah. This time works out okay for me. Earlier in the day, I have a commitment with Penn, usually shuffle Monday and afternoon around. So I can do three, one of them. But, I mean, this time works fine because it's about 5 o'clock my time. I can just make sure I'm home for 5.
I mean, I'll say if no one cares, Thursdays are probably a little bit better for me because I have a class Tuesday evenings.
Ah, right. Thursday, it depends if I can get my hands on a phone at Dalhousie. I have a class 2:30 to 3:30 there, and then our statistics seminar is 3:30 to 4:30. However, the coordinator of the seminar is very pregnant, and she hasn't been coordinating very much. So if there isn't one, I can get home for 5. If there is, I have to try and find – my office at Dell doesn't have a phone. I just have my cell phone. So if I can find somebody with an office with a phone who's willing to let me get into their office to do the call, I'm fine. And if I can't, it could be problematic.
So why don't we stick to Tuesdays?
Well, Michelle, would you have to pay for the call if you were on your cell phone?
It's on my cell, yeah.
Even though the call's free?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference.
Why don't
we
do Tuesdays then?
But, you know, why don't I look and find? I mean, I may well find that somebody who's going to be going home would let me into their office and let me use their phone.
Well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to send an email out.
Yes.
And say, okay, you three work it out, but it looks like Tuesdays or Thursdays might work.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem reasonable?
Sure.
Okay. And I'll include you in that, Marge, but it sounds like you would be like me, well, better than me because I've never even done a simulation, but secondary. Does that
secondary.
Seem right?
That's good for me.
Okay.
You know,
I guess
the other person to be involved is if I do get that student who's going to be involved, it would be great to have him on the meetings as well.
Sure.
Yes.
So maybe we can, you know, still be flexible on that until we hear from him whether he's interested in doing this, and if so, when he's free.
You know, maybe what might make the most sense is to, if Michael is willing, if you would just take this over. I just did this because, you know, Don didn't let us know till the end of last week
that
he was leaving, and I just thought if I didn't do something, as Michelle said, my God, the phone call's supposed to be Tuesday afternoon. This was like last Friday or something. So, so how would you feel about scheduling and initiating the call, Michael?
That's fine.
All right. I'll send you the information.
Great. Great. I'm fine doing that.
It's easy to do.
Yeah, I've worked with Gene before. I've set up the meetings with Cause, so that should be fine.
Okay. Great.
Right.
Okay. Great.
All right. So
do we know any? I mean, do we have any more information about what happened with Don? I mean, both from the sake of the group, was there anything that happened with it? But also, you know, as a collaborator, everything okay with him? Do we know any more?
I tried to find out, and I failed.
Okay.
All I know is that he says it's for personal reasons, and it isn't his health or his family's health.
Right. Okay.
So, and I begged, and it didn't do any good. So.
Okay.
I begged, and I actually tried to call, and he didn't answer my calls. So, but I mean, I'm still in occasional contact with him, but. He's a private consultant, and my best guess is this was taking up way too much of his time.
That's my guess
unpaid.
As well. So he had business opportunities elsewhere.
I know. I would hate to think it was something I did or the group did, because I would want to know that, but so that we could not do it anymore.
Yeah.
Or
right.
I could not do it anymore, but he wouldn't say anymore. So.
Right. Okay. I mean, I'm not asking for too much detail. I just kind of wanted to know whether it was a group dynamic question or, you know, but it sounds like it's just a decision he made, so.
Yeah, that's what he says, and I don't know, you know, I guess I just believe that. At first I didn't, but
maybe he's got some huge new project coming in that he can't turn down.
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
But the only thing that was a little bothersome is that he also then resigned from being discussant. I mean, you don't have to be part of the cluster to be a discussant at JSM.
Right.
Right.
But he told me he doesn't even know if he's going. He thinks he hopes to. So,
right.
Well, I don't know. Okay.
Because he has to pay his own way, doesn't he? Because he's not.
Just like me.
I'm going to end up paying my own way.
Yeah. So, yes, when you're no longer affiliated with an institution, unless it's a good one, you end up paying your own way. The good ones continue to support their retired faculty, in my case. But Don, I don't think, has ever been a faculty member, so.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right. Anyway. Great. So, am I in charge of the agenda? Is that what I'm hearing as well? I'm fine doing that. I just want to make sure I'm not.
I kind of sent out a really rough, broad agenda based on your last email and the email Don's had sent out back when he was still going to run this. So.
Right.
And I put JSM at the front of it because, as Phil said, I don't want to lose it after all the work we've put into it.
Right, right. No, I think that's right. I think that's right. So,
if we're not actually going to do the presentation, then I probably won't go to JSM this year.
Right, right. No, I mean, it's definitely on my, you know, both personal and you know, group agenda to get a presentation on the simulation at the JSM and you know, try and get a paper out the same time or soon after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sounds like that's of interest to Phil as well, being, you know, another pre-tenure faculty. You know, Michelle has expressed interest, I think, as well in that.
Yeah. I wasn't concerned whether we had it in time for JSM. Because I thought we'd all got something we were doing for JSM anyway. I'm just concerned we get it done. But obviously it's easier for me this year because I'm on sabbatical, and next year I'll be teaching.
Right, right. You know what? Right, right. Okay.
I mean, I figured we had up to 2 years to get this done. It had to be, we had to be all set and completely geared up by the time we got to the next Oscots.
Right. So, remind me again. So the JSM, we were not going to present on the simulation?
We had our own thing. You and Phil were doing something with the database where you're comparing courses or methods.
We were looking at instructor characteristics associated with student attitudes, right?
Yeah. And then Marjorie's got something. I'm sorry, Marjorie. Was yours? Were you doing, like, focus interviews or something?
For students, I call it the hidden attitude, their perception about statistics and how that's affecting some attitudes. It's work that I'm doing with a student.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have always said to me when I've presented information about the SATs that, could some of the results come from that students don't know what statistics is before when they do the pretest?
Right.
Right.
And so I sort of want to see if misperception is involved anywhere. You know, it's one of those questions, and I had a student who was interested in doing that work, so moved forward with it.
And then Carol is doing the expectancy value theory paper. I was going to be chair. I don't think I should be a discussant because my name is on two of the other papers.
Yeah, and we need you as the organizer.
Yeah, and I was the organizer.
Chairperson.
Right. So, Michael, you can be a discussant or you can do a paper, whichever you want to do.
So from their perspective, I mean, what's the purpose of a discussion is kind of just to synthesize the other papers and bring them together.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not sure, given that I'm working on one of the papers and the others are more on, you know, the ed psych side of it, I'm not sure that I would be the best discussant on it.
Mm-hmm. Mine's not ed psych, by the way. Mine's all fancy.
Yeah, I mean, Michelle, right, exactly. So I kind of feel like, you know, I can comment on my own work with Phil and then, you know, hopefully give some intelligent comments on Michelle's as well. But the others, I wouldn't have much intelligent to say.
Well, if you want to do a paper, that's fine.
Do you know what our time frame is on deciding this?
Well, yeah, we have. If you just be a discussant, you can just say, I'm going to be the discussant. But if you're going to do a paper, you've got to get the abstract in before the end of the month. That's the problem.
Right. I know February 1st, because, you know, part of it is that I was still trying to figure out whether I was presenting some of my other research, which is why I didn't step up to present instead of Phil. So, I mean, I just need to make a decision of what I'm presenting at JSM.
Can people present two papers?
What?
Can people present two papers at JSM?
Have your name on two papers, but you can't present two papers. So I could be second author on Phil's work, but you can only present one.
Well,
at JSM,
I thought
they're
talking about other research too. I thought you meant outside of the attitude cluster.
Yeah, yeah. If I present on some of my other research outside the attitude cluster, I can't also present on the attitude cluster.
Okay.
So I just need to decide for myself, really, of just what I'm doing. I have it on my agenda to think about because obviously February 1st is the deadline for abstracts.
Already before I heard from Don, emailed Tisha and said, we've got four abstracts in, I'll be the chair, Don's going to be the discussant, and then when he pulled out, I had to email her again and say, sorry, Don can't be the discussant, and we're looking to fill his slot. So I would like to know also, because that way I can let Tisha know.
Sure.
I don't know how competitive these things are going to be. In the past, they haven't been. But that doesn't mean that the stat ed folks have an infinite number of contributed paper session slots available.
Right. I'm looking. I was going to say I have a meeting with Tisha on February 2nd, but that's the day after the deadline. So.
My guess is that if you were being a discussant, we could all help you come up with things ahead of time.
Right.
But the idea is to try and pull things together and make it look like we've got a coherent presentation, not just, you know, four people all talking off in different directions.
Right. No, I agree completely. My only concern is if I'm a discussant, does that preclude me from presenting other research? Because
actually, I am looking online right now.
I know they have, like, you can only be one of one presentation, but there's a couple other things that do, that are exceptions from that.
That
so is discussion
true.
An exception?
That says deliver a main presentation, and it does include present and discussant is included as deliver a main presentation.
Yeah, so I think it doesn't look as good for my department. Again, I'm very
tenure
conscious right now, but it doesn't look as good for my department to say I discussed other people's papers as compared to I presented my own work.
Right.
What if you and Candace switched roles? Could Candace be the discussant and Michael be the chair? Because then being a chair wouldn't stop you from presenting, I don't think, or would it?
It does not. You can chair a session and also deliver a main presentation. So if Candace, and I know that Candace's concern about that she's involved with two other papers, and I understand that concern, but I think that she would probably be the best discussant.
Yeah, so do I.
I agree.
I think that Candace would do a great job as the discussant.
Yeah.
I mean we have to make sure that we have all of our papers to her in a timely manner.
Yes.
And you know, follow the deadline.
Support
that she
and help if she needs support and help getting it together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but that means that I'm the discussant when half of the papers have my name on it.
I don't think that matters.
You know, I actually think that's not uncommon practice. You know, and I actually think you'd be, yes.
Well, you understand what's going on.
I mean, you can synthesize it in a good way because, you know, it is based on what you've done. I agree, you know, sure, maybe it'd be nice if someone else comes in like Don, but we don't have that option right now, it sounds like.
Okay. All right. I mean, it's just at the American Educational Research Association annual conference, this would not be acceptable. It would not be considered ethical.
To be discussing on research that
I'm involved with.
Uh-huh.
But JSM is so different that if it's not a problem.
I mean,
you know what?
You want somebody who's going to kind of tie it together, don't we? And
right. I mean, another option is just because if we want to stall for a week. You know, because that decision is a minor decision. That's a minor change of who's the discussant in terms of the whole session. You know, the other option is we stall, and if we want to, you know, if I decide I want to present on the simulation stuff, then we could do that instead of a discussant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just let me know so that, you know, you need to make your mind up, because whatever you decide to do, you have to get an abstract in, don't you?
I have a week, yeah. I have about a week and a half to make that decision, so in either case.
Okay, well, for me, it's better not to wait the week and a half because I get nervous. But
I agree. Why don't we plan on touching base, Candace, at the end of this week?
Okay.
By the end of this week, and then we can figure out what we want to do.
Okay.
So it sounds like the options are either I will present a paper and we won't have a discussant, or I will be chair and Candace will become discussant.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, or we don't even have to worry about the chair. Tisha will get one.
Right.
The chair seems to do nothing except time people.
Exactly. And introduce people, but that's nothing.
Again, see, if I were chair, I was going to, like, I don't know what I was going to do. In any case. Okay, so I'll hear from Michael by the end of this week about what you want to do, and either he's going to give a paper or I'm going to give up being chair and become the discussant. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, you ready to talk about the simulation?
Sure. So we've had some great discussions up till now. I think, you know, as it says in the agenda item, we do need to refine our goals. What are we looking at? What are we trying to show? And maybe that's a good goal for us, either today or as homework, to really say, like, what's the two sentences of what we're trying to show for the purpose of the simulation, because I've sometimes felt a little lost of what exactly are we trying to show.
Can I interrupt for just a minute? Because
sure.
One of the things that Michelle reminded me of was something that Marge had said about the expectancy value stuff. In the process of doing this, we really need to think about who the audience is going to be.
Right.
And that means either, to me, it means knowing that our audience at JSM is likely to be mostly stat ed people, so are they going to be interested in a real statistic-y kind of simulation? or are they going to be more interested in what this says in terms of statistics education and doing research in it? Similarly, it has to be decided, I think, real early on, because if it needs to be done to be submitted to a journal, and the journals tend to address different audiences.
Right. No, I think that's a good point. We might be looking at two different audiences for JSM and for a publication.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I think that's right. In my opinion, I think that as we move forward with the research, we can frame it differently for the two populations, even though the crux of it will be the same.
One thing we talked about earlier, Michael, is we might actually have, in a way, almost like two papers. One that's to do with educators who don't have strong stats background, and one which is more towards the stats journals.
Right.
So you remember we talked about this before? We said when we're doing this, we might end up with a stats paper.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, in my mind, presumably we're going to do a presentation at USCOT the summer after next, and the audience there may not be statistically sophisticated.
Right.
A lot of people there that I talk to, I mean, some of them are in they taught info stats, but they didn't really go beyond that.
Right, sure.
So they're interested in how this impacts on their teaching and how, you know, they would measure things.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not interested in lots of, you know, detailed models and how we did things and what went astray. They just kind of want the results and how it applies to them.
Right. Well, I mean, to me, those are even two different questions. So there's the hardcore, if you will, statistics of doing the simulations. There's the question of how does this inform future educational research? So kind of advice to educators of, you know, what is a good choice of a pre-post analysis? And then even beyond that, there's the application to, like, how do we use these in the SAT survey specifically in other surveys, you know, in other educational research?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess in my mind, we're still starting with that initial framework of we need the good simulation.
Yeah.
You know, and then we can build upon it from there.
If we built on where Don started, Don's main thrust of this was to compare two groups. And that seems to be the idea behind the whole of that Benate book. They're not kind of looking at describing a treatment. It's all on comparing treatments. I mean,
right.
I think they say that right in the introduction. And what I seem to understand from Don, and one of the reasons he was saying, well, some of these other concerns people have don't matter, is because if there's a problem, the problem of the analysis is there in both groups. And somehow you might still pick up differences between them, even if, you know, there's other stuff going on where you might prefer one method over another. I don't know whether I've said that very clearly.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think that addresses on some, maybe I should call it escapist level, of Candace's point about validity.
Mm-hmm.
In that if you're looking at two groups, while the validity of the measure is important, you really care only about differential bias.
Mm-hmm.
Is each group differently measuring the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you're comparing two groups, you can at least say on this measure they differ, which is a valid statistical argument. Now, you know, after that, you can step to the discussion of now, do we even care? Because if this measure is not relevant, you know, is it important to us? Is it different? And I think that's a good discussion to have. But the first part is the pure statistics of it.
Is everyone convinced that we have to start by comparing two treatments, that we can't start by looking at just pre and post, which is what everybody's got?
The methods and models that we've come up with so far were specifically to compare two treatments.
Right.
I mean, a lot of that was based on reading the Benate book, and that book is based on comparing two treatments all the way through, pretty
right.
much. Or, well, sometimes more than two treatments, or two groups or multiple groups.
Right. I mean, to me, that's just a stronger design. You know, if you're, if you're trying to show that, you know, for example, take the situation where one instructor, me, for example, you know, I find this SAT survey and I use it in my classroom, and suddenly I find that the scores have gone down. That implies to me that I'm a horrible statistics teacher. But that's not a fair statement because, as has been shown, you know, Marjorie has said this before, I've heard, you know, that it often goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, with, you know, and so in my research, what I had looked at was not did my SATs go up or down, but how much did it change in a control group versus a treatment group. So that can answer how does this treatment impact student attitudes. And so to me, that's a more natural design of an experiment.
Yeah, it's just that there are almost none out there. And Michelle and I were talking about the issues that you have if you try and design an experiment, all the threats, the internal threats to validity. I guess it's internal, because if the students are at the same, if the students aren't at the same institution, you have a problem. If they're at the same institution, you have a problem because they talk, they drop out of class, they switch sections. They enroll because their friends are enrolled, and so on. So it's not, even given infinite amounts of money and really good ideas about how to improve statistics teaching, it's not a trivial thing to do. Now, having said that, I'll also say I got an email yesterday from somebody in Denmark who wanted to know, it's okay if I use gain scores. To analyze
right.
the relative gain scores, to analyze the difference between my cooperative learning and my other class. So, but, I think if you looked in Surge and in JSE, gosh, I can't even, I mean, I haven't done this, but I'm just guessing. I would say at least 95% of the articles that are talking about any kind of treatment are pre-post only. Is that a weak design? Yes, indeed. It just happens to be what students are, what instructors and researchers are doing. I'm not saying you shouldn't do what you're saying. I'm just saying that we need to know that going into it.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, I think that's fair. You know, if you don't have that experimental design, then you're talking about an observational study of what happens in the classroom. And the issue for me is that you have these confounders that you can't even contemplate measuring all of them. And so I agree. I think both designs have flaws in them. And the more I learn about educational research, the more I realize that there's so much that goes into it
mm-hmm.
that we don't measure and we don't even have good methods of dealing with.
Right.
But,
right.
But my two comments on that is, one, but it's normally done that way anyway. And two, it's a bad system, but I can't think of a better one. You
right.
know, so
well,
the way that statistical methods are generated are assuming that all this stuff is not relevant.
What I'm saying is that what is normally done is a pre-post design.
Agreed. I thought we're discussing here about whether we should be looking at a pre-post design in an observational study or a pre-post design in comparing at least two treatments.
Right.
I thought that's what I thought the discussion was about.
Yeah.
Did I misunderstand something?
No, that's as I understand the discussion is. My question that I'm going to throw out there is I'm hearing you guys talk about two groups versus the one group, you know, an observational study comparing pre and post, or this idea of having a design study with two groups. We have done work with the two groups. At this point, I don't know if we want to change horses in the midstream.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that being said, you know, do we really have two different two objectives? I mean, we should probably only go after one of them. I think that it would be great to do a simulation for the two group idea and to do the simulation for a one group just comparing the pre and the post. So I'm not going to be doing a lot of that work. I think it's Michelle, Phil, and Michael who need to, you know, have we gone so far down the road of the two groups that it's not worth going back and starting at the beginning again? I don't know, so I'm going to shut up now.
I mean, I would say I completely agree with that. I was just going to add as well, I think that the one group comparison is an interesting one and one that perhaps we should do after this. You know, I think that's exactly the same as what Marge just said. But, Michelle, do you have an opinion on this?
I think by the time we've done that, we'll have all sorts of stuff that we can put into it. I sent an email around last night, which I'm sorry had a notation error in, and I've resent since and fixed it. Did anybody get a chance to either see it or look at it?
I saw your email.
But did you have a chance to look at it?
I did not read through it.
I've
been a little busy with other stuff, so sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I mean, I knew it was at the last minute. I just also knew that I dropped out of the discussion last time, so a lot of things that I would have had to say couldn't get said. I'm sorry, I actually ended up sick for 3 weeks. So. Excuse me.
That won't help us.
Hmm?
I read it, but that won't help us. Sorry. Are people there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to stop the conversation. I think if you feel that you should do the two groups, do the two groups.
I mean, to me, they're both important questions, but they bring in different frameworks and different issues that, even from a simulation perspective, we'd have to deal with differently. So in my mind, it would be two different yet related research areas. I mean, I'm happy to put this on the, you know, get you later table that, from my experience, sometimes doesn't even get looked at later, but... you know, that it'd be really interesting to look at, you know, what are the issues in an observational study that were not present in the, you know, two-sample experimental design that we're talking about.
But, Michael, you don't have an experimental design, and then I'm going to shut up. You don't have an experimental design unless you do random assignment. Did you do random assignment?
No.
Okay. Then you have an observational study also. It's just that there are two groups.
You are correct.
So,
yeah.
And to me, I mean, that I said I would shut up. Okay, one more thing. To me, I think our language in this is going to be really, really important because I see wrong use of language in the stat ed research that's coming out. So, okay, I'm shutting up.
Yeah, I mean, no. I think your point is a good one, and I think that we do need to clarify that in my mind. What we're looking at is the expected value of the impact of one group minus the impact of another group, which I'm going to naively assume can be treated as a random sample from two different populations. You're absolutely right that there are issues that come up because that's just not true. But in my mind, that's the purest approach, purest, IST, not EST, purest approach to it that allows us to begin looking at the inferences that are made. Then once that's done, and this is the order that's in my mind that may or may not be appropriate, but I think that's what's often done, after that's done, we can look at, okay, now what are some of the real issues that come in when we don't have that randomization? But in my mind, I still have the first step of let's naively assume that it's all there.
So we're doing a kind of ideal situation to get us started. Then after you've looked at the ideal, then you say, well, what happens in practice?
Right, and I don't know the answer about whether all of that needs to go into one paper to make it a good paper or whether there's a statistical theory paper about the impact of this, then an educational research paper about let's bring this into reality and how does this impact us. You know, I don't know how different those papers are. I need to do the work first and have more discussions, you know, hopefully with Candace involved, because you clearly have a good perspective on this.
Okay. Well, I think Marge's point that a lot of work has already been done on the two groups is also an important point. So, I guess probably what you'll be hearing from me are some things like Don was assuming, and Michael, I mean, and Michelle too, I can't figure this out because I just am not good enough in simulation. I'm not... In fact, I'm just bad in terms of simulation. Don P. has continually told me that the relationship between pre and post is going to be the same regardless of what happens to the treatment. And I completely disagree. Is that taken into account in the simulation plans so far?
I don't understand what you just said. Can you say it again?
Yeah.
Can I offer a reframe and an answer? I think, if I'm understanding you correctly, I think we did start talking about this in our last conversation by, and this is where I'll bring it back to Michelle's question, by including a parameter for the correlation between pre and post in the model. So we have a parameter in the model that's going to allow the relationship between pre and post to vary.
Between the two groups.
Between the two groups.
Okay, great.
Did I answer both Michelle and Candice's question with that?
You answered mine.
No, I'm still not quite sure what you said to start with, Candice.
So I think Candice's question was, do we have a parameter that allows the correlation to vary, or are we assuming that there's a specific correlation that always exists between pre and post?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Right.
That's my understanding of her question,
right,
perhaps translated into statistical lingo.
Okay, thank
now,
you.
My question is, we include in the model a parameter that allows the correlation between pre and post to vary. Does that parameter, can we have a different parameter depending upon which treatment?
Can the correlation be dependent on the treatment? So
well,
the correlation between pre and post. So you're saying the correlation between pre and post is, I'm going to make up numbers, 0.4 in the control group, but 0.6 in the treatment group.
Yes. I'm just curious.
I don't know that we've gotten that far.
Well, and I don't know if that would be, if that would occur.
Yes. Yes. That's
I would say it could.
Yes, I would think it could.
You're going to have a different pre-post correlation depending on the treatment.
Yeah.
That's, I can give you some evidence if you want it, but that you can't assume that the correlation between pre and post is going to be the same or even really close in treatment one and treatment two.
Right.
I know that complicates things, and you may want to start building a model in which that correlation is the same.
Yeah.
For the two groups initially. Sometimes, it's always easier to start simple and move to the more complex.
And to me, that's exactly what the simulation can help us do that, the statistical theory can struggle with more. Of saying exactly as Marge says, if the correlations are the same, maybe the end result is all of our analyses are simple and straightforward. But when the correlations are not the same, this analysis shows a benefit because of this, whatever. And I wouldn't be surprised that if we make naive assumptions, life is simple.
Right.
that's a statement that can probably be generalized in many areas, but...
to all of life.
Exactly. So, and I had started writing up some of this from our call last time. I think some updates to what I had written up for the last conference call that I think I never sent out. So maybe that would be helpful for us to do. Again, if I can say, in my mind, I think, I think there are a couple stages to the whole simulation project. One is writing down exactly what the models are that the data are generated with and the models that are used to make inferences about the data. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if the model that generates the data is the same as the model that makes inferences,
then you do
it should be straightforward, simple, and fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's when that's not the case that it becomes more interesting and enlightening.
And that's what happens in real life.
Exactly. And then we have questions that we've maybe peripherally dealt with at times of, do we want to deal with missing data and what is the missingness correlated to? If students have horrible attitudes in the class, they're probably more likely to drop it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if their attitudes get worse from where they started from originally, they're probably more likely to drop the class, and therefore they become missing data. And so to me, those become interesting questions that are practical as well.
I agree.
You know, so I mean, I really think we need to define our models, talk, you know, define all the parameters that we're going to be looking at, then start doing the simulation and start interpreting the results that we get. Depending on our audience, we're also going to need to put in the framework of, okay, now let's move a little bit back to reality and say, what are the other issues that might come up that we haven't even dealt with? You know, like this lack of randomization, this validity, you know, all the other questions that Candace keeps reminding us of, that, you know, that we don't live in this idealistic world of statistical purity.
Damn.
I know. Wouldn't that be nice?
Everything's normal.
It wouldn't be nice because, well, at least not for me. That's why I got out of physics.
Oh, really?
You know, it's really interesting. So, again, in my work with the educational folks, I know that Arne Duncan, who's the Secretary of Education, his director of research, you guys might know this already, his director of research basically came out saying, in the past administration, there have been a lot of, you know, randomized controlled trials about evidence-based education and what's, you know, what can show differences. But the problem is when you take those into a classroom setting, they all break down because all of the conditions that you put on the research fails. And so he wants to use strong scientific evidence that has utility in the classroom and not just stuff that has strong scientific evidence, ignoring what happens in the classroom. And I think this is exactly what Candace is pointing out of, you know, we have to check where reality is.
Context is important.
Yeah.
Context of the students, the instructor, the classroom, the everything. It's really hard because it's very, very complex, but that's what makes it interesting to me.
Right.
Well, so what is the best thing to do to actually get the work going? I mean, I think these conversations are critical and important, and they're certainly going to help me be a discussant if that's what I end up being.
Right.
But what needs to happen? I mean, we've got a paper from you, Michael, and we've got a paper from Michelle. Do those need to be integrated? What needs to happen?
I'm sorry, what do you mean a paper from me and a paper from Michelle?
Well, you know, two pages that talk about the simulation.
What we had sent out.
Yeah,
you know, I think what we need to do...
Those ideas, because we haven't... And I don't know what happened in the rest of the conversation last time. We hadn't decided for sure what we were doing. We were coming up with ideas so we could kind of put it together and then decide which things we were actually simulating, which models we were using.
Right. I mean, I think what we need to do is just start getting kind of a master sheet of, you know, what are the models, what are the parameters in the simulation that we're going to be using, and, you know, one of us kind of takes ownership of it and then passes it along to, you know, maybe I'll take ownership first, pass it along to Michelle, she'll, you know, update it with notes, she'll pass it along to Phil, he'll update it with notes, come back to me, I'll update it, and ideally, if we can get all that done by a month from now when we have another conference call, I think that would be good progress. You know, and then the plan from there is, once we have that set, we can start doing simulations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, start with very simple, with all parameters being, you know, unrealistic, but then start building up and saying, what if we change this parameter? What if we change this parameter? What if we change both of these parameters at the same time? You know, what does that do to the results? You know, and once that's done, to me, then you have the core of a paper or a presentation or both.
Yeah.
So, is that a reasonable goal for us, you know, within the next month, before the next conference call, to have that set?
Yep.
You know, and if we decide to move forward with this as a paper, I could easily write an abstract of 100 words that doesn't require us to know the answers yet. Well, I mean, I've done that before, saying, you know, the results of the simulation will be examined.
Yep.
Right? So.
Well, that sounds good to me, but I'm not involved in doing the work. So.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I don't think it's going to be a huge big deal. I mean, there are three of us. We've all run... Well, I don't know about Phil, but I've run tons of simulations. It sounds like Michael's done lots of simulations.
Right.
I don't think running the simulations is going to be a big deal. I'm not even sure we need the graduate student because we've got three of us who are already familiar with what's going on.
Yeah, no, I agree. For me, it was kind of this graduate student was excited about doing something, and I thought this was in line with his skills, so I didn't know whether, you know, I don't know. I'm open to whatever is most effective and efficient for the group and the research.
The one other thing I'd wondered about was depending on the audience. do people expect certain software? I mean, do people in StatEd assume that we'd be using SPSS, for example, which I'm not familiar with?
No.
Oh, no, they won't care.
No. My experience of the StatEd people is that they actually are pretty varied. So you do get some ed psych people, but you get some pretty hardcore stat folks who are like, we want R or SAS.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, that's my sense of the StatEd folks.
Okay.
Is that consistent with you guys, Margin,
yes.
Candace?
Yes. I think that you can. I don't think that your simulation has to be in R, in SPSS, in any one item. I really don't. I probably suspect that some people do their simulations in Fortran.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not even sure that we would need to present how we did our simulations.
Right.
No.
You know, Don was talking about making this stuff, you know, the software, the program accessible. Maybe I missed his argument, but I wasn't convinced that that was an important part of producing the research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless we get
people are going to want to go out and start simulating, they'll figure that we've done that already.
Right, right. You know, unless we get something that says this integrates nicely with the data you have from SATs,
mm-hmm.
you know, then we might say, here's, you know, a simple simulation that says, if you assume here's the pattern of the missingness, here's possible results you could be getting. But I'm not even sure that would be helpful for them, because we should already say, if you're missing this is this, here's how it impacts the result.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. For me, that's something to table until later. We can decide if we want to do it later. But
well, at least from an EdSight perspective, people are expected to indicate what software they've used. And the reason for that is that, of course, as you know, is that different software use different, for example, optimization procedures and so on. So and that doesn't mean you all need to use the same software. And it would be – it's stronger, in fact, if you don't, and you still get the same results. But otherwise – the hierarchical linear modeling programs, for example, do not give identical results.
Hmm.
Yeah. I sit back. I mean, I think that of anything that's going to be giving me different results from different softwares, I'm always suspicious of that.
Absolutely.
I don't think they're wildly different.
No. It just has to do with how many decimal places they keep.
As I was going to say, I think it's more things like decimal places.
Oh.
They're not orders of magnitude different.
Oh, okay.
No, they shouldn't be. I mean,
okay.
The you know, how many iterations of a certain process do you have to go through until it stops?
Yeah, and whether you can set the tolerances yourself, and if you've changed them, and, you know,
exactly.
You max it.
Oh, I thought you were saying, I'm sorry, I kind of went to the point. You get different results, being that you may come up with different models from different software.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Sure. You know, if they're both using stepwise procedures and bringing variables in and out of the model, they might have different procedures for that. Yeah, I think that's fine. Did we agree on what software we were going to use? Did we say SAS or R?
If I'm doing stuff, I would want to use S+ because it's what I'm really familiar with. And also, I've got a good system that I can work S+ on.
And we're okay calling that R? I don't know enough about what the differences are between S+ and R.
Well, very often you can move code from one to the other, but if we had anything big and heavy, our big, you know, like parallel processing stuff has all got S+ on. So I've always used S+ because we didn't have R to start with. I mean, the machines at Dalhousie now do. But all my previous code is all in S+, so I've just kind of stayed with it.
Okay, and I think Phil said he's okay with either SAS or R. So, you know, I'm okay. I actually don't have S+ on my computer. We don't have a license for it here at Villanova, but I have R because it's free.
Okay.
So,
well, it'll end up – we may even be able to trade code and still
Right, that's
it.
What I'm saying. So, you know, if we're using S+ and R, maybe we can plan on just trading code that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I don't know about – you know, I know there are very minor issues about when it does come up between S+ and R, but
yeah.
I think they're few and far between.
Well, I think the kind of stuff that we're doing, there may not be. I know that there's all kinds of add-ons. And Dalhousie has a whole bunch of different add-ons for S+. I don't know how R works like that. So, for example, if you want to do spatial statistics with S+, there's a spatial module that, I mean, not that we're going to want to do spatial, but there is
right.
one, and, you know, Dell has it. Well, I mean, if they didn't have, they could still have S+ and not have that spatial module. So I have no idea how that kind of stuff works with R.
But I assume the modules are just basically a set of functions that you can import in.
Yeah.
So, you know, if those are accessible.
With examples, data sets and stuff.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So I'm fine with that. So we can check with Phil, but why don't we plan on doing it in R?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's you know, a good choice anyway.
Or
yeah, that's
S plus slash R.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so it sounds like we're good with that. So I'll start with it, and I'll, you know, try and synthesize some of what I've seen us talk about in the past. Michelle, was your the file that you sent around, was that talking about the simulations, or was that relating to the research you've done in your classroom?
Talking about simulating data. Last semester, I did some simulations, not comparing two groups. I just looked at Marjorie's data, and I was playing with Marjorie's data. I was trying to figure out, were these things happening, you know, because we'd used a Likert scale, or was this pattern in the data because we had regression to the mean and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, I had to generate data, so I simulated data different ways. I'm just describing some of the ones I did because, excuse me, it included things like adding in measurement error, which does give you regression to the mean, and a couple of things like that. Now, I did not do it comparing two models. I just generated a bunch of data based on pre-scores that I took by kind of variations on Marjorie's pre-scores.
Right. Great. Sounds like Michelle's going to be well poised to take lead on the next article when it comes
generating
out.
Generating data. I also have a whole bunch of stuff I haven't sent out on, because presumably we haven't even listed what we're going to save. But with the RNS plus, you can put your results each time in a list and then pull it out of the list at the end if you want.
Right.
But, excuse me. I'm losing track of what I was saying. Sorry. Forget it. I should have had notes.
Well, you can put things in a list and you can pull them out?
Yeah, then at the end you can go in and pull out all the p-values, all the confidence intervals. You just put each of your outputs into a list. I know what it was going to say next. I also have stuff, which I did vaguely mention last time, but I don't think I got into it, which is when you've got, say, all your p-values, how you assess them. Because with 10,000 simulations, if we really want to do 10,000, we're only going to have to be slightly off uniform, and we'll pick up that it's different. And I just had some things as to how I have stuff on how you would, firstly, how you test if it's uniform, and secondly, excuse me, things I've done before to decide. The part that matters is between, you know, the sort of 0 and 0.2, because they're the p-values people are going to be concerned about.
Uh-huh.
And you can do, say, a confidence interval on the nominal 5% level. I mean, if in fact you're between 0.49 and 0.51, nobody's going to care. Sorry, 0.049 and 0.051, no one cares that it's not 0.05.
Right.
I mean, with Bootstrap, you can be quite a lot more out than that, and people still say, oh, Bootstrap's doing a great job.
Right, sure.
So once you've decided it isn't quite uniform, and a lot of them won't be depending how we generate the data.
Right.
We need to know how far out we are, and I haven't sent anything on that round. And I do have stuff, because the only proper statsy paper I have was on simulating things and doing stuff under the null and looking at the p-values and were they uniform and stuff.
Right. Okay, and, you know, when I had done some in my dissertation work and we looked at, you know, I'd mentioned this before, coverage probabilities.
Yes.
You know, of what percent of the confidence intervals of the estimates contain the true parameter.
Yeah, I've got that.
You know, and I think that's just the same.
A lot of stuff like that in my thesis.
The same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
And different ways that you can present it graphically, because people who aren't terribly into stats often will cotton on if you give them a graph.
Sure, sure. A picture's worth 1,000 numbers.
Yes,
so.
That's right.
Exactly. But I haven't sent any of that round, but, you know, we can do that by email.
And, you know what, I mean, in my mind, that would be, you know, if we can keep kind of one master document of the plan, that would be great stuff to add, you know, at the end of that document of you know,
yes,
how we're going to assess it, because I think that's crucial.
Right.
So why don't we work from there? We can set a meeting for a month from now. Should we start doing that together, or should we just fill in Michelle and I try and figure out a date, and then we'll see if Marjorie and
I think
Candace
that would
can join
be,
on?
A good idea, having the three of you know there's a time, mm-hmm. and then let Candace and I both know. And if we can make it, then we will.
That's fine. I'm in Florida from the 11th through the 28th of February.
Oh.
And, you know, it will just depend on if I can be near a phone or not.
Well, and the hope is that, you know, if we're using the ReadyTalk system, we can also record it. So if you just want to listen to what's going on, you could do that at your leisure on the beach somewhere. So.
Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to laugh.
It was intended for the humorous factor, so that's fine.
Okay, so am I discerning that we're probably almost done, or do...
That seems right to me, and I have to get going at 5 anyway, so...
Oh, you've got a class to teach.
I've got a class to teach tonight, so yeah. Michelle, do you want to just tentatively pick a date, and then we can figure out whether Phil can make it or not? I'm thinking about either the week of the 15th or the 22nd of February.
Yeah, it probably should be sooner rather than later, because we don't have to do a whole hour. But,
okay.
You know, you can only do so much with email. Sometimes it's really useful, even if it's only 20 minutes, to actually be talking to people directly.
Right. So you want to do it either the 16th or 18th?
Yes,
February?
16th, 18th, question mark, and I'll look into whether I can get a phone on the Thursday.
Oh, you know what, the 18th doesn't even work for me on Thursday because I have another conflict.
Okay.
So why don't we plan on the 16th at 4 Eastern time?
Okay.
And then we can check with Phil to make sure that works with him.
Yeah, okay.
Now, am I going to... my phone just went blank. Are you still there?
Yep.
Okay. Am I going to try and write a summary up of this talk, or is
of this conversation that we've just had?
Yeah.
I already have the summary of it.
Oh, do you? Wow.
I typed it up.
She actually had it before we started talking. That's impressive.
No, actually, I've been typing as we've talked, and I have.
Wow.
I've been moving along, so... I never promise how good it is. If I understand the conversation, I write an outline for us. So,
did you do that last time?
I don't think I understood the conversation last time. I might have written it, but as long as I don't get lost, I type something up for us. So I'll be sending it out.
Great.
As soon as we're done.
Great, thank you.
Sounds excellent.
Yep.
All right, sounds good. Sounds like we can move forward on this. So, just to review quickly, action items. Candace, I'll get back to you soon about the structure of our session at JSM.
Sure.
And then I'm going to take lead on sending something to Michelle and Phil. I will CC it to the group, so anybody who wants to look at it can.
Okay.
And
that's
I called
it a master sheet.
Great. And then maybe, Michelle, you can be next on the list to kind of update it and comment on it, then send it to Phil.
Excuse me. The thing I sent is a PDF. Do you want me to send you that as a Word file? Because you might want to incorporate it.
Sure, that would be great. That would be great.
It may not be the right version of Word, and I know that the formatting goes really weird from stuff we've been trying to send back and forth to each other, but it will have all the content in, and then you can look at the PDF to see how it
Sure, goes. And I have the PDF, yeah, so I can look at the formulas and whatever else might change.
Yeah, I'll do that tomorrow.
That'd be great. So then I'll give it to Michelle will give it to Phil, and by, you know, maybe the end of the week, I guess February 12th or so, maybe we can ask Phil to send it back out to us so we have a couple days to synthesize it before our meeting on the 16th.
Yep.
Were there any other action items on this? I mean, I know we talked about a lot of other structures, you know, of looking at one sample instead of two samples, and I think the decision was to table most of that until afterwards.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I agree that was a decision. see, I always start simple and then go more complex, but that's okay. That's just me.
I don't think one of them is more simple than the other. I just think they both have their own separate issues.
Yeah, I do. But I think the thing about the two groups is that, in a sense, we're only looking at that difference between the groups. That's what we're testing, and that's what we're doing the confidence interval for. So at the end of the day, there'll kind of be less stuff to deal with. Is that a correct statement or not?
Not for me, because each group has a pre and a post. So, yeah, you've got two groups, but each group has, you know, a nested variable that is the time of administration. But, see, so to me, that's why this is more complex than only looking at time of administration, but I'm not trying to convince you to do that. I think that what you've got set up is just fine. Oh, I hate it when I talk and then everybody...
I think that what Michelle's saying is we isolate a single parameter of interest, which is the difference between the groups
mm-hmm.
in the context of two samples, where one sample the parameter we're interested in is the correlation between pre and post?
No. It's how you interpret pre and post, what kinds of analyses work the best for looking at pre and post if you only have one group.
And that might be different from the ones that are best for comparing to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, but I certainly agree with you that they very well could be different.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I would suggest, I think these are great discussions. Why don't we table them and, until we're ready to start thinking about those, and then we can hash that through even more. Or maybe even, when we're ready to write up a publication on it, just to have at least, a paragraph or two on, other issues that are out there.
Yeah, future research.
Yeah, exactly. The best way to get funding in the world is just put something about future research in a published paper, and then, hey, by the way, can I have some money to write a grant on it?
That's right.
Great idea.
Okay.
Were there any other action items that we talked about that I didn't mention?
Not that I have written down. I think the main action items was the master sheet, and then by the end of the week, decide what we're going to do about JSM.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the action items. The only other thing is to confirm with Phil the February 16th at 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Next call.
All right. Does somebody want to take on that role, just checking with Phil?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Are there any of us that need to stay on the line to talk to any of the rest of us about anything?
That's general.
We could talk about
stay on the line.
I actually need to get going because I do have a class to.
Okay, I think you drop out, Michael.
Okay, so Michael,
right.
The answer to him is no. Goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah, my answer is no. Goodbye. So.
Good phone call.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that leaves Michelle and Marge and me, right?
Yep.
Yes. And could we maybe talk about the regression towards the mean issues? Or I don't really understand what we need to be concerned about with the data for the article.
I haven't had a chance to look at any of that, Marjorie, because I've actually been really sick for the last 2 weeks, and I've been on antibiotics, and the only reason I went into work was I did all my data collection last week, so I had to go to every stats tutorial all week.
Okay.
And in fact, I didn't even drive. My husband drove me because I didn't feel well enough to drive.
Oh, dear Lord.
I'm now madly trying to catch up, but I put yesterday and today for looking at stuff for the analysis group. It actually took me several hours just to sort out all the emails and then print off all the relevant bits.
Okay.
So I'm not in a position I can usefully discuss this at that moment, but it's on my list for tomorrow.
That's okay. The
first, and we've also got a snowstorm coming tomorrow. So I'm going to be limited by what I can do from home, but I can get into my Dalhousie, which is the good computer account from here. I'm just hoping I have all the resources I need at home here. I went into my Mount St. Vincent office today and picked up anything I thought I wanted. Mm-hmm. This three-office thing is driving me nuts, but in some ways it's good. So I'm sorry I can't contribute to that right now, but one thing I was going to say, Candice, was we'd set up a phone call for later in the week, and we might be able to confirm a time. Hello?
Okay, wait. there are a couple of things I'd like to say about what the issue is.
Sure.
Because I know that Marge and I are not on the same page about this.
Oh, okay. So listening in might be very useful for me.
It isn't a matter of understanding what regression toward the mean is or anything else. It's a matter of saying there are three possible ways to look at students, to identify students who change position between pre and post. And I'm just calling them changers for a shortcut. Okay, the way that that Marge had been thinking about it and I had been thinking about it initially was to look at the scatter plot where you have pre along the horizontal axis and post along the vertical axis.
Uh-huh.
And then you plot all the points and you draw what Marge and I have been calling quadrants but are really nine. They're not four. And saying, okay.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Let's look at the changers, and those would be the folks that aren't going up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started, I read Bonatte's book and Regression Toward the Mean, and been thinking about all the conversations I've had with Amy and all the stuff about game scores, and thought, well, all right, perhaps it would be a good idea to make sure that these folks are really changers, regardless of whether you look at it using the original post scores or post scores that have been corrected for something. So I corrected them for two things. I corrected them for Prez regression toward the mean, and what basically occurs is exactly what you would think. You get fewer changers because the really extreme Prez aren't allowed to impact the post in the same way. So that if you do a scatter plot of pre on the horizontal and an adjusted post on the vertical, adjusted for regression toward the mean, you look to see, are there more students that are lying right down, you know, the regression line, or are the same students that were away from that, the changers, still the changers? And the answer to that is no. However, it makes sense what you still have. You still have some of the changers as changers. But Amy believes, and I believe also, that it's covariance that we should be using. So there's a third way to get adjusted post scores.
Uh-huh.
That's to run a bivariate linear regression with pre as the covariate, post as the dependent variable, the predicted variable,
yep.
Whatever you want to
yep.
call it. And you look at the residuals.
So let me get this. So post is the Y variable and pre is the X variable.
Right.
Okay.
And so if you regress pre out of post and you look at the residuals, that's what's left over in the post, taking the pre out of it. That I tried to put into quadrants, but it's not the same thing, and I can't figure that out. Looking at the numbers, it appears to me that no, the changers do not stay the same. Some of them do, many of them don't. But I don't know. And I probably spent 40 hours working on this. I don't know. So Marge, do we understand regression toward the mean? I don't think anybody does, or most people wouldn't do what they do. I don't. But it's a way to adjust the post score for a problem we know the pre-score has. And covariance is a way to adjust the post score to free it from the pre-score. If there are changers, we should be able to identify them regardless of the method used.
And how do you judge changers with the residuals?
I don't know. That's when I gave up. Because I wasn't talking. Nobody was talking. You know, I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. I don't have anybody here.
Well, people, the ones who have the most extreme magnitude of the residuals will be the most unusual people.
And right. But how to break them out, I just somewhat arbitrarily used, you know, between minus 0.5 and plus 0.5 for a residual score, these are unstandardized, by the way, so they're actually in the scale of the SATs. So that middle point, clearly, those aren't changers. Then I just split them up into some groups, but at that point I realized I did something stupid. I eliminated from the data set all the students who were actually right on the boundaries in Marge's scatter plots, and I shouldn't have done that because they can move with these other approaches.
What,
and I said, I got to give up.
What do you mean by on the boundaries?
Like that. But that's the issue. I don't think that it's fair to suggest to instructors that they examine their unusual students, that is, their changers, using a pre-post scatter plot unless we're sure or relatively sure that those changers really did change, which means looking at least
but
that.
But they did change.
Pardon?
They did change.
But post is correlated with pre. So let's say it's correlated 0.6. That means 0.6 squared, 36% of the variation in post is due to pre. So they're not independent of each other. That's the whole problem with game scores. So basically, we've done a graphical representation, so to speak, of change scores. And I just want to make sure that it matches. I don't really care about the adjusted toward the mean. I care about the covariance residuals. Those are the ones that are freed from the pre. The extremes in those defined somehow are indeed the changers.
Perhaps we have two different kind of, I don't have language for this, and I'm not very good at language. I know that the language I use doesn't always match the language that you folks use. Maybe we have two different kinds of changes. I mean, maybe there's different students, you know, respond differently, and we're identifying two different groups, but could they still be meaningful groups?
How are we identifying two groups?
Well, you're identifying one group of changes the way you described at the beginning. You're breaking it up into the nine, you're breaking your plot into nine pieces, and then saying, I guess, the top left and the bottom right are the people who are changing the most. Is that correct? They're the ones where the difference between the pre and post score would be greatest.
Yeah, we actually included like three quadrants above and three. Mm.
Right. So we got
right.
Extreme changes and
below.
Some moderate changes or something like that. And then the ones with the residuals, where I guess you'd be looking at extreme residuals.
Well, I don't know how extreme. I mean, that's another thing.
They may not be extreme ones.
Well, yeah. They vary from about minus 3 units, sats units, to plus 3 sats units. So it's the same pre and post scores. So the changers are the ones, I mean, just for point of discussion, let's pick greater than 1.5 points and less than minus 1.5 points. Those folks should be in the changer quadrants in the pre-post scatter plot. If we've really got changers. I mean, unfortunately, what this means, Michelle, is that the analysis project we've all been talking about should have been done first, but graphically sounds great until I started thinking about, well, what's happening to those? What's happening to those people if you define post freed from pre? And that's what you want. You want to know how the students come out regardless of how they started. From my perspective, that's what I want to know.
Well, perhaps we're finding two different things. That's still what I'm getting a sense of. But, I mean, I would like to go away and look at this, so I've thought about it. I mean, I'm just giving you sort of how an audience would respond if you were putting this out, right? But
okay.
I think perhaps you're identifying two different types of change. I mean, we don't have different words for it because, well, I don't know the appropriate language for a lot of the education stuff anyway. Maybe we're identifying different, different groups. I mean, it does look like certainly, I'm thinking of your first plot. I mean, that top left and bottom right, those students are certainly differing from the other students with the same pre-scores, aren't they? If you look at all the students with the low pre-scores, the people at the top left are different from the people at the bottom left and in the middle. Even allowing for the fact, you know, we've got measurement error and everything else going on.
A regression toward the mean. And those are exactly the people that are going to regress the most, the folks at the extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So to suggest that instructors look at them really closely, I don't feel comfortable making that suggestion unless we can show through another method that indeed they are the changers. I don't think these are two different groups of changers, but see, my fear is that the scatterplot changers, that this is due to statistical, I don't want to call them artifacts, statistical realities that just occur. That the covariance is the one that gets closest, even though there's all kinds of issues with that too. So that's all I'm suggesting. We can forget about the post-test adjusted for the pre's regression toward the mean. Covariance does that automatically. So if we can just show that we can identify students as changers on that scatter plot that are also changers using the covariance residual, I'm going to be a happy camper, and I'm going to leave poor Marge alone about this article, meaning, you know, mm-hmm. saying go forward.
So what we – could you repeat – that one more time, that what is it that we do, take, look at the residuals.
Right.
And do what?
Make sure that those students who have the extreme residuals, and I don't have a definition for that, I made one up for the conversation, are indeed the students that we've called changers in the scatter plot. And my guess is what's going to have to happen, if this is even possible, is that there's going to be a buffer zone set around the boundaries in the scatter plot so that just falling in one of those quadrants isn't enough, that they need to fall far into one of those quadrants. They need to be extreme in the quadrants. But I don't know that.
Well, I was looking at, I have a plot of distance from the regression.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the difference between pre and post.
Mm-hmm.
And I coded if that difference was in magnitude 0 to 0.5. 0.5 to 1 to 0.5, or 1 to 1.5, 1.5 to 2, and so on. So I coded them. So I'm, in the original scatter plot of pre to post, what you're going to have is you've got a line, and you're going to have one color or one grouping if they're close to the line, and as you go apart from the line, they change color.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a way, that is of importance because, as Candace says, it's how they've changed. So the more extreme changers are the furthest away from the line. Then what I've thought about doing is going in and coding, well, I don't know. I've tried to look to try to identify those non-boundary people within a quadrant. Like, but I can't. There is no simple way of doing that. It's arbitrary for a data set.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of. And if it's arbitrary, then the method isn't useful. But I don't know that. It may be a matter, I mean, this is an estimation anyway. So it may be a matter of saying, well, draw the quadrants and then add a point on either side of them or something. And if you do that, then all those changers indeed also have extreme residual scores. Or they don't.
Well, you're also only going to be having an extreme residual in general if you're in certain quadrants.
Ah, that's what I'm trying to show, Marge, and I can't show it. I can't see it.
In your original plot, I really must look at this tomorrow, because the more I hear, the more interesting it gets.
Well, it's very much related also, Michelle, to what, you know, the pre-post analysis thing.
Mm. The line of you three middle, quotes, quadrants, or whatever we're calling these groups, is that line got a slope of one?
Is what?
Does that line have a slope of one?
Not if it's a regression line.
No, it's not the regression line, though. I'm just saying you split it up into these nine things, and that one going across the diagonal probably isn't the regression line. It's probably something more like a principal component line. That's the one your eye picks up, usually. I'm thinking if you drew a plot that had that on and also had the regression line on the same plot, that might give you insights into what's going on. That was all I was thinking.
Well, SPSS is a pain in the butt when it comes to drawing scatter plots.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I haven't been doing that. I've been trying to actually use numbers, which works
okay
for me. But
I really like plots. One of the things with the residuals is usually if you're trying to identify extreme ones, you do standardize them, and then if it's bigger than 2.5 or less than negative 2.5 is your sort of your potential more unusual ones.
Well, yeah, but there's no, like, that didn't come down with the Ten Commandments. It's just that people have decided on a 0.05 in the extremes, so I don't think we necessarily have to stick to that, and the problem with using standardized residuals is they're not in the same scale as the SATs. If you use unstandardized residuals, they are.
The problem with the unstandardized one is, though, that the standard errors are different in different parts of the regression line.
Oh, crap.
And that's why you standardize them. You don't standardize them all the same way. You get that 1 minus HI inside a root underneath, and HI is the leverage value, and that's different in different parts of the data.
Well,
I thought this course
okay,
a year ago.
We can turn them into standardized. See, the thing of it is, doing the scatter plots the way we've been doing them, it's like looking at gain scores. I do not believe gain scores are valid, nor do, you know, as my ex-student and now friend Nancy said today, nor do 4,000 measurement experts. I know that Don believes that, and that's fine, but I don't, and I've got a lot of evidence to back that up.
So what do you look at?
Because post is related to pre, and if you want to look at students who really have changed, you want to look at students whose post scores aren't where pre says they ought to be.
Yeah.
And that means getting rid of pre out of the post.
Well, that says you can do the same thing. You can draw the regression line on your plot, and if some points are far both from the regression line and from the line that you've already got, this, I don't know what line it is. It's probably something like a slope one line through the mean. If it's far from both of them, then it's unusual from both criteria. And then you can feel fairly confident that those people are unusual. They're the people who have been most impacted by the course.
Well, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Both. Okay. I can't get SPSS to draw these plots. And I don't know, Marge, will Minitab do regressions, bivariate linear regressions, and draw plots?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can add lines using Minitab. There's a bit somewhere you click and you get to add a line. You just put the points in a couple of columns and it will add any lines you ask it to add.
Yes.
So, I mean, it would do one with the regression line on already, and then you could add a line, you know, that's going across your middle three quadrants.
Well, Marge, is this something that you think you should do? If I'm asking that right?
the take the original plot or the residual plot?
No, you just do your original plot.
Okay, so you go to the original plot.
Of which
post on
gone.
The vertical and pre on the horizontal.
Right.
And then on that, instead of doing all, for now, instead of the circles, just to start with, there's a line that would be going through those middle three circles or quadrants or whatever we're calling
right.
them. And you could draw that line in and also draw in the regression line. You would then see points. The ones with the big residuals are the ones furthest from the regression line, and your
right.
changes are the ones that are furthest from that other line, but some people are going to be far from both.
Okay.
Then at least you know by both criteria, whichever people choose to use, these people are unusual. They're higher than their expected value given the pre, or lower than their expected value given the pre, and they also have the biggest changes.
Okay. I understand that, and I believe I can do a graph with that.
I think you probably want to have the separate graphs as well, because it's a lot for someone to take in, like the graph you've already got, one with just the regression, then maybe one with both on.
Mm-hmm.
Then you kind of entered everybody before they start to say, well, couldn't you have done this? You can say, yeah, I looked at both.
Mm-hmm.
Well, except that the only reason that I wanted to do this, I didn't want this in the article. I just wanted to make sure that what we were saying wasn't incorrect about changers.
Mm-hmm.
So can we use what you're suggesting, Michelle? And I'm not just asking this question to Michelle. It just
right.
sort of came out that way.
Yes.
To help us figure out how in a scatter plot to allow instructors to identify the changers that will generalize across components that have different pre-post correlations. Because instructors are not going to run regressions. I don't think a single instructor...
Oh.
They haven't told me if they've done anything with their data. But certainly they're not going to run regressions. And if they've got a class of 22, you know, that's just not going to work.
Well, what's most likely going to happen is that top left quotes quadrant and the bottom right quadrant will most likely, I mean, I don't know because I haven't looked at this data, be the ones that are furthest from both. I mean, your line's going to not be quite as steep. It will have come down, so it's closer to a little closer to horizontal.
Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at that about the regression line.
And then it depends what you're interested in as well. Doesn't it also perhaps depend which question you're asking? I mean, do you want to know how they're doing given their pre, or do you just want to know sort of how they're doing? Because obviously people at the extremes will be the ones who've got the most potential change.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably the ones that you're most interested in. I mean, if you've got somebody who's very negative, you're probably very interested in how they change.
Yeah. I mean, you would, if you've got somebody who's very negative, you hope through the class that you're going to increase their
yeah.
attitude in the
yeah.
course. I mean... the only, it's sort of like you've got in your upper right quadrant, I call that quadrant three, they're high and they stay high.
Yeah.
You like those.
Yep.
you want that. You know, there's positive quadrants.
Mm.
You know, if you start low, you hope you're going to have somebody who's going to move up to the middle quadrant or move up to the top quadrant. You know, if you start out low, you hope that by the post that they have changed.
Mm-hmm.
If you start up high, you don't want them to be a changer. You want them to stay there.
But in point of fact, they change anyway.
Some do.
Well, they don't all, though, do they?
They don't all do that.
So see, now I'm, this conversation is also getting me to think about those folks that are in the low pre and low post quadrant,
mm-hmm.
the lower right, lower left-hand
mm-hmm.
corner. I mean, maybe those folks are ones that should be explored also by instructors. What characteristics do they have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do they do in the class?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So I think
maybe even a part of the paper would be, you know, a discussion of the quadrants,
mm-hmm.
and maybe in more depth.
Yes, but we have to make sure that the folks that are in the quadrants are really, they really belong there, and that's what the residuals should tell us.
Why don't you try drawing it with the two lines on and just see what you see? If that line's going through, when you label your quadrants, Marjorie, do they go like 1, 2, 3 across the top row, 4, 5, 6 in the middle row?
Uh-huh.
And then 7,
8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
if you find your regression line is going from 4, 5, and 6, then that says at least those people are close to where you would expect them to be given their
mm-hmm.
pre's. So perhaps they're not of such interest as the ones in the more extreme corners, which for sure you're interested in.
Although I think the lower end of that regression line instructors should be interested in, because those are the lower.
Well, I think you'll find the ones in the bottom left, the bottom of the bottom left one will also be, you know, below that line. They're doing worse than you would have expected. I guess the point is that, I mean, people will be a little bit off, and how far off do they be before you
right.
talk about them? And that's probably one of the things that depends on the group of students. I mean, some students, they all kind of, well, I guess it isn't that relevant, really, is it, how the others in the class are doing? Yes, it is, because they all affect each other.
Yeah. Well, so it sounds to me like we've got a place to go next. Marge, does it sound like that to you?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just so you know, SPSS got me again, and the quadrants that I put in the first data set that I sent you are not correct. Anything that is calculated, you know, like the predicted-wise, the actual observed pre's and posts, that kind of thing, those are correct. But so that's why I did the second data set and had the not-so-brilliant idea of taking out the ones that were on the boundaries from the scatter plot, the pre-post scatter plot, and that was stupid. Also, student ID 22 is not in either of those data sets, and except I think I put them back in the first data set and sent it to both of you again. I'm not sure. I know
first data set, but he's at the last location. Is that correct?
He's the last one in the data set.
Okay.
The last row in the data set.
Okay.
And all that's there is the residual and the quadrants, which are wrong, and his student ID. The residual's right. I didn't put in predicted. I didn't... you know, I just didn't fill that the rest of that line in, because I was trying to. This was not meant to occupy us for a month, but
no.
Since I haven't been able to figure it out, it has. What can I say?
But it's good for preempting comments from reviewers, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, and I don't want to put anything out there that's suggesting to people they do something that's not correct. Been there, done that, don't want to do it anymore. I mean,
okay.
I'm not ever going to recommend that somebody do a dependent t-test. That's game scores. I don't care if it matches the statistical distribution or not. I really don't. It doesn't tell you what people are assuming it tells you. But, okay. So, all right, so do we know, this is the royal we. Marge, do you know what you're going to do next?
I know that what I'm going to do next, at least in part, is to make some scatter plots with A, the line, I kind of think of it as y equals x, that line, then the regression line.
Some people call that line that diagonals through the data. We have one guy who calls it the correlation line. I don't know where he got that notation or terminology from, because I hadn't heard that before. But it's kind of a nice terminology, because you get the same line if you switch your X and Y around, whereas, you know, the regression line changes.
Right.
Well, but it isn't the correlation line. I mean, it isn't a correlation. That's assuming the correlation between X and Y is 1. We know
so,
that's not true.
No.
It's the regression line.
It's an orthogonal regression line is what your IC is going across there.
Why?
But nobody knows what that means, so that's not usually helpful to people because they're not familiar with orthogonal regression.
The regression line, the line Y equals X line.
Mm-hmm. You could call it the identity line. I mean, it's a sort of
identity. Yeah, I like the identity line.
That's good.
Then I guess look at extreme points.
Yeah. From put your quadrants in and then look to see. I don't know. I'm sorry. I thought about this way too much, and I'm tired, so I'm not.
I was about to say, we're all getting brain dead.
Yeah, no
problem. I found this really useful listening in, by the way, folks. Thank you.
Oh. Well, I still am not. I mean, I can start on looking at this. I'm really not sure how, with the residual plot, what to do. I think that you're with. How to judge a changer with the residual plot just does not make sense to even judge whether somebody's a changer or not with the residual plot. But I'll think about it.
Michelle, you didn't say to do a residual plot, did you?
No, I said put the regression line on the original one. But you could do a residual plot. I mean, it would show you the people with the most extreme residual.
Right.
Well, I guess the problem is that it would be hard. Sometimes it's hard to match the two plots up.
Yeah.
If you put one above the other so that it depends what your software does. If it does your residuals versus the pre, or whether it does them versus the predicted values, if it does them versus the X, you can put one plot above the other and your eye can kind of match them up, because I do that for my students, but it's not what the software does. When you give it a default and ask it to do residual plots, it doesn't.
It'll do how whatever I want it to do.
Ah, okay, good.
I just have to tell it. But I'll do my best to try to figure that one out. I can even find the residuals off the line, the identity line. That's not that hard, because 1 is equal to 1, 2 is equal to 2, and you can, you can find that residual plot without any problem. You can make those residuals off of the identity line.
Mm.
I don't know. I'll play with some stuff and go at that way. I'll play with some stuff, put some stuff in a Word document, send it out, and we'll go from there. Maybe we can talk through email or person to person. Michelle, are you planning on coming to visit Candace near the end of my spring break?
At the beginning of your spring break.
At the beginning.
We're booked on the 3rd, and we're coming back to Nova Scotia the next Wednesday. So we're going from Wednesday to Wednesday.
So let me go get my calendar out.
I think it's the 3rd and the 10th.
The 3rd to the 10th? Okay.
It's a Wednesday, a 3rd, and Wednesday,
yes.
A 10th?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Those are my two travel days.
Okay. Candace.
Mm-hmm.
I am decided to take the train.
Okay.
It is less stressful. And I'm going to get a sleeper car so that I will be well rested. I'm going to get a sleeper car coming to see you so that I will be well rested when I arrive. I would be arriving on March the 6th.
Okay.
And I will leave on the 12th.
Just a minute, I'm writing this down. You've already got your tickets?
Yes. I can do some adjustments if that does not work out, but I was afraid. I caught a good deal, and I was afraid not to take it.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
Yeah, but
blame you, so.
Amtrak is very good. I can make an adjustment if need be.
Okay, so that really means that you're here 3 full days when Michelle is here. Plus part of the day when you arrive and part of the day when Michelle leaves.
Yes.
So good.
That's good, because we actually have quite a lot of overlap in a way. I mean, we're looking at the same kind of data. It's just Marjorie is doing this stuff more with plots, and we're going to be comparing analyses.
Yeah, so, okay. So I know, am I in the right week? Yeah. Okay, so are there things the three of us need to talk more things, or should Michelle and I try and set up our call?
Why don't you guys set up your call, and I'll get off.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, good to talk to you, Marge.
It was good talking to you, Candace.
Okay.
Thank you for letting me listen in. I am getting a better feel for this kind of data every time I talk to people.
Isn't that so true? It's so important to have people to work with.
Oh, yeah.
Without it.
Imagine if I was trying to do this on my own.
I couldn't do it on my own. So I have to have other people to work with.
And Marge, we still have a lot of other SATS data collection project stuff to figure out at some point.
Do you want to, I could call you on Skype, or you could call me on my home phone.
Well, I've been trying to set these phone calls up through Gene, so they're free.
Oh, okay.
They're attitude cluster stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing is we would need to know when. That's what it sounds like. There are 2 pairs of us that need to schedule calls.
So have sent you an email with my times on.
Yeah, hold on.
So maybe I'll bow out now.
Really look at it. Let's see. Michelle, here we go. 2:33. Okay, should be home by 4:30.
Michelle, what is your time zone in America's, in the United States time zone? So that is it like mountain?
Well, we call ourselves Atlantic, but I don't.
Oh, so you'd be
it's
more
about
like
four.
Eastern.
I think it's. I'm trying to read my watch. I think it's about. Goodness, is it really 6:45? I think it's 6:45 my time now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. 6:45 my time.
6:45 your time, and it's 4:45 my time. Okay. So you are two hours ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Atlanta time. So you're like even further than Eastern time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so, Michelle, I'm looking, let's see, Thursday, okay, should be on by 4:30. That would be 1:30 my time.
Yes.
On Thursday. Let's try that. I will see if you'll hear from me as soon as I hear from Gene.
Okay.
And we'll do it the same way, with the same codes and everything.
Yes, because that makes it much easier for me to keep track of what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, also, it means that we don't have to pay for it.
Which certainly helps the budget.
Yes, no kidding. So, all right, so it may be too late to hear from Gene today, but probably tomorrow morning. And so, Michelle, you and I are set then.
Okay.
Am I supposed to do anything to get ready for this call with you, or are we just
Think so.
Okay,
I'm just going to look at some of that stuff you sent, because any insights I get into this is going to help me with my own data and also help us with our good, bad, and ugly, because they're all things, you know, we're going to have to be thinking about when we're doing our analyses. So.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'll take a look at this, and it's going to be, as I said, it's going to be small weather-dependent. We've got this storm coming tomorrow, and we've got people coming to look at our insulation, so our house isn't very well, the older part of our house is not very well insulated, which is not good given our winters. And they're coming in tomorrow and apparently blowing air in and out of the house.
Oh, my.
So I don't quite know what's going to happen. It's going to be an experience. Okay, I'm going to get off the line and leave you two to organize your call.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Good talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so, Marjorie, I will also set up a call with Jean when we figure out when we want to talk.
Okay. With the, I did send out reminders to everyone. I have got, we have some non-participants from the fall.
Non-participants in the sense of?
No post with the Staris and Klein.
Okay. So how about grades? I only have half those.
You should have. The only grades that you have outstanding, let me look, let me verify. I need post file folder. Okay. Malone, he is saying that he's getting those. Lubeck, I sent her a reminder. That's it.
Okay. Have we gotten back instructor and course surveys from everybody?
I sent a reminder to those whom I have not received those.
Have we a bunch or not so many?
Not so many. Let's just say the Lubeck and Malone, if they haven't done their grades, they haven't done their course survey. I sent a reminder to Godlian. We have grades, but no survey. Scal, grades, but no survey. And Bond has grades, but no survey. She will do that, though. I promise you.
I know you'll do it.
She doesn't need a reminder. She knows to do this. She will get it in, I promise.
Do we want to send them a drop-dead date, basically? I mean,
Thursday.
Calling it that.
I called it Thursday. I said, I really want this by Thursday. If by Thursday I don't have it, I will send another reminder.
Well, but see, the way my syntax is set up.
You can't run it until you run them all.
Well, I can, but it just takes me twice as long. So, and I only have to have the grades, but let's see, how can I say this? What I do is I put them all together. That's what the syntax does, and that's why it's great to have them all, to be able to do this one time spending 20 hours doing it. But I then separate out that big file by instructor. I don't need to do that if we're not sending it back to them, and they don't get it back if they don't do the instructor and course survey.
Yes.
So it saves me a lot of time to have a definite end date.
Reminding them
that that's the agreement, or they don't get their data back.
So if by Thursday I have not had any response from them, I will send an email out saying that I must receive your grades and the survey must be completed by midnight of Sunday, the 24th.
Right. You can just say that we're finishing up the fall semester and it's just impossible to go back to it. So,
mm-hmm. So that you can think of January the 25th as your deadline, because I'm saying midnight of Sunday.
Yeah.
So on Monday morning at Monday, probably when I get done teaching my 1 o'clock class, which would be done at 2 o'clock, I can at that point send anything I have. And I will let you know at that point I got distracted for a minute. I can let you know at that point who you should not do that to, you know,
I'm not being clear. Just
no, I got it.
You can can you put in the missing, yeah. Can you put in the missing elements there?
Yeah, yeah. No. Okay, no. I know that you sent me an email asking me should you do X, but I don't know what that X was. I can't remember it, and I'm having a little trouble finding the email. Something about other people wanting to participate?
I went ahead with Goblin, and I sent him a reply saying, you're a graduate course. We can't afford to do graduate course.
Okay.
So I went ahead and declined.
Okay.
His request.
And who was the other? Carol Ramirez?
Oh. I have, it's Malone and Ramirez are the ones that have requested, but I hadn't sent out survey or URL. I sent those out. And at this point, do you want me to close the request?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got way too many files for me to deal with.
Part of the situation is that we have got what we are experiencing at this point, with the exception of Beth, is that we have Beth Chance, one instructor. We have two instructors at Winona State, two instructors at Idaho. We have 1, 2, 3 instructors at Hope.
Only three? Oh, but they have multiple sections.
Yes.
Okay.
At Hope College, we have two instructors at Monmouth College, and we have two instructors at St. Olaf, and then Ramirez. So we essentially, all of those are 7 institutions, but multiple instructors at those institutions.
Oh, God, that's like my worst nightmare.
So what I have done to help your worst nightmare is I'm going to send you a new date file, and there's right next to their name is their course name. So I really believe strongly that there should be no mixing, Lord willing, if they're not of the same course. So, for example, Malone is teaching 3 courses, different courses, 110, 210, and 305.
Okay, good. There won't be any.
Only the 210 has 2 sections.
Okay, well, he had students who took it under the wrong URL, and I don't think if I
and yet we combined when he had the same thing last fall,
right?
That
in the butt.
But what you had the mixing in was probably 87 and 88 as course identifications. But 89 would have never been mixed because it was a totally different course.
Right. I never have any mixing in your courses, in your sections.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, but see, the difference is in Beth's, for example, they go take in a lab,
mm-hmm.
and they seem to float between the labs. And so they just get whatever URL is there or whatever URL their friend has, and they do it. But it takes me, it just takes me an amazing amount of time if they have separate URLs.
Perhaps, what if I say when I hand out the names, if there are any students that are not in this course, they are in the other section, let us know.
No, it doesn't help. Because we did that last time with Beth. And it doesn't help.
No, what I mean is, like, on the pre, already have them separated.
We did that with Beth. I sent her a thing, and she wrote down the sections. But it didn't matter, because then there's the post, and then the grades come, and what I have to do is I assume the grades are right, which is, of course, reasonable. Then I have to take everybody who's got a different CID from before, and that included folks who Beth placed in a section, and I have to go into their pre, and I have to go into their post. If there's two sections, that's two pre's and two posts, and change the CIDs by hand. So I don't have any problems with you know, because your students don't do that. I had problems with Beth's. I had problems with Malone's. I had problems with somebody else. It took me forever. And I don't know about Carol's. I doubt it. I think those sections are split so that they're not, you know, they're not attached in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I had suggested that we just give for people that we know we have trouble with, that we know we have trouble with their students, and that would be Beth and Chris Malone, and I'd have to look because there's somebody else, too, that I spent a long time doing this. Just put them in one URL, but it's too late to do that for the pre.
Well, it's simple enough to combine them.
Yeah, but then I have to change the CIDs and...
You're going to have to change the, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can combine the files for you.
No, it isn't a matter of that. It's a matter of having to change the CIDs then.
Well, if we put them all in one file, how are you going to know which CID they have anyway?
I'm not going to know until, but I don't think I can run SPSS. I don't know.
Well, I could put a CID in there.
I don't know. I just know that I've tried various things, and none of them work very well in the sense of being time efficient. So, I don't know. It doesn't, I think you should just collect them the way you've been collecting them. Let's revisit this before the post.
Okay. The, well, under the dates URL, or the dates file that you're going to get, probably before the end of the day, probably tomorrow or Thursday. I have the names. So you can look on there and probably say, oh, if you have a mixture, it's probably going to be that they, hopefully you won't have any mixtures, but at least you have the course name. You can look on them and see, oh, Malone's probably his 134 is not going to be mixed in with any other of his sections because that's an entire class all by itself. You know, his 137 should not be mixed with anybody. If there's any mixture, it should be with, or it would be, hopefully we won't have it, 135, 136. So, but you can, once you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about. I think
yeah, but this won't be of use until the end of the semester.
Right, but I'm going to go ahead and send you the dates file so that you have the dates. I think that you kind of like to have the dates.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I will also send you a new updated your flow chart. It's got just a few, I think, a few to add at the bottom.
Do I have, oh, gosh, I don't know what you call it, the master file that includes everybody, all the participants, instructors, from the, that includes last semester's?
It was probably sent to you at one time. I will send you the updated one.
Okay, that would be great.
I have not updated. There are other tabs in it, like I separated by IID and how many sections we had, fall, spring, fall, spring, and the year.
Uh-huh.
Nor have I updated the Carnegie.
Oh, I don't care.
Okay.
I just, it's the other thing that I use a lot, actually.
Okay.
Okay, so I have my book open, my appointment book. When are we going to talk? As though we haven't been, right?
Let's see. Let me look at another place to check that out. I'm online on my, I can do a remote desktop, which allows me to get online onto my work computer, which is kind of nice sometimes. Okay, I have time,
I mean, normally your time is worse than mine, but I'm not sure that's going to be true this week. I don't have time until Friday afternoon, if we're going to do it this week.
That looks about, how'd you know what I was looking at? I was like, Friday afternoon looks like the first time I'd have that opportunity.
Or Saturday is fine also.
I'd rather do Friday afternoon.
Okay. I probably will be home by 3.
So that would be?
4 your time. 4?
Yeah, I could do 4.
Okay. Do you want me to see if we can do it through the...
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, and if we can't, then I guess we'll have to figure out another time.
I think, yeah, I think that that will, but we could also, I could call you and charge it to the school.
Oh, okay. All right, well, if...
Yeah, because I think that this is research-related. I don't feel bad about charging that to school.
Okay. All right, well,
there.
Let's see if Claus will pay for it. I'm just going to tell Jean that we have, you know, multiple subgroups doing stuff. And so
yeah.
We've got 2 more calls coming up.
Okay, let's see. Sorry that I sent you a an email. I just saw that the one, I'll read it in a minute, but about me sending you Carolyn's information. But you got to see the letter that I send out, and I am very clear about don't mix them. I don't know what...
control. Beth doesn't have that control. She doesn't, because they get the stuff in lab.
Well, it's like I even say when students from the wrong sections take the SATs from another section, you know, it is difficult. Please ensure, and I'm not sure if I spelled ensure right, I spelled it with an I, that students receive the correct URL for their section. And
I think that she does that, and I just think that they do it with their friends. You know, do you see what I'm saying? I really don't think Beth can stop that. I wish she could, but I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, I'm very much going to be interested in finding out how my class did, because I did mine in class. And I had a sheet of paper for the 9 o'clock, and then I had a different sheet of paper for the 1 o'clock. And I've kept the sheet of papers separate, but I don't know if the students mixed them outside of class, but they should have taken them inside of class.
Uh-huh.
All I can say is I know it worked. So, but we should have very good response from my class because basically we did it all in class, so that was good. All right.
Okay, and obviously the paper, I don't think the paper can be done by the end of January, and I know I wanted it to, but that was before I just realized how confusing. I thought I was going to be able to sit down in a matter of a few hours determine whether or not changers were changers, regardless, whatever the word is, of how post was determined. And that was really stupid on my part, but then I often am. So I don't think you ought to do any more work on the paper until this is straightened out, because we may need to take a different tact, unfortunately.
Well, what I do need to do is I need to reread the paper. I know that probably sounds that I've put the paper up in my head, and I need to reread it. I need so that it's fresh in my head. I need to look closer at the email you sent me concerning the regression or this residual changer thing. I understand it a little bit better. I still need to process it a little bit more. But should I turn my attention more towards, at this point, there's a part of me that says we need to turn it more towards working for, is it that we need money? I mean, I don't know where to go, so.
Okay, well, we can talk about that on Friday.
Okay, let's talk about that.
I've had some more input from some other people who do grants. And
okay.
If that's the method, and that is not the easier method, easy for me to say because I sit here, but the easiest method is for you to beat on doors.
Well, let me we have a brand new development vice president. Just started a week ago. So.
Well, on Friday, let's talk about that, because I think how it's presented to him or her is
mm-hmm.
really important.
Okay.
And I got a couple of opening lines, actually. Do you know what the background of this development person is, what their degree's in?
No. But I can try to find out.
Yeah. Because it always really loosens people up to say, I bet you had to take statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And how'd you feel about that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if it's an engineer, that's not going to work. Or, you know, a statistician or a mathematician, that's not going to work. So it would probably be good to know. Now, anything else, education, sociology, psychology, probably business, I mean, you know, then you kind of already have them thinking about this before you even start to talk about what it is you're interested in. So, okay, well, we'll talk about it on Friday.
Okay.
And I'm glad we're back together on this, but I know that you're saying that you need to take weekends off.
No, actually, I wasn't. I usually don't look at emails. That doesn't mean that I don't. I mean,
oh.
I... It was actually, I did a lot of work on scatter plots that one weekend.
Oh, okay.
On that Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And I might do preparation for classes. I may get on the computer, but sometimes it's like I open up that email box and I get bombarded by students, by other faculty, other issues, and if I want to get something done, if I do not go into it, then I'm safe. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but what you said here, it is not uncommon for me not to check email over the weekend. I need to distance from work for my own mental health, and I interpreted that not to mean just emails.
Well, sometimes I do.
The distance from work, I thought you meant,
No, I usually do, though, Candace, take a day off on the weekend. It's either a Saturday or a Sunday that I take off. I did not last weekend. I worked last weekend both Saturday and Sunday. I didn't check emails, but I worked both days.
Yeah.
But typically on a weekend, I will take either Saturday or Sunday off.
See, maybe I never told you when I was at UNM. When I first went to UNM, we taught three classes per semester.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they were undergraduate classes, and, well, all, initially when I first started, all of my classes, they'd have 40 or 50 students in it. I didn't have undergraduate advisees, but I had dissertation students. And some of them I was working with literally weekly and all summer long when I wasn't paid. And finally, because my RA was so bad, I needed a course release under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and my dean had me figure out how many hours a week I was working. It was between 60 and 70.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm trying to say to you is that different things, but I had to do all this stuff too that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps slightly different. You do undergraduates, I did graduate students. So I know what that's like, but I don't know any way to get the work done and not do it, unless you just get rid of some of the work. And I can't do that anymore. I just can't. I can't. So, I mean, you know, the fact that I spent all that time trying to do scores, I mean, that's not anybody's fault but my own, except for the fact that I just want to make sure that when the article goes out, it's correct and useful.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
No, I agree. I want to have the best article that we can possibly have going out.
Okay. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm coming from, and I've been basically told I have to exercise every day, and this will be, well, I may be able to work it out. And having, of course, Don quit was not real helpful.
No. and I would agree, and it's kind of, but, and I understand.
I know you're working. I know you're working hard. I know all that stuff. It's just that it has to be that way if we're going to do research and publish and do grants. And so maybe that's something we need to talk about on Friday. What needs to be, from your perspective, your priorities, you know, listed? Forget about Monmouth. I know that. I know those priorities. But in terms of the other stuff. Is it web-based data collection? Is it getting money for it? If it's going to be web-based data collection without money, then I'm going to have to teach you SPSS, and it'll kill you. It'll kill to. And I'm not saying that because then you'll be doing it all.
Well, I think that, you know, it's as you said, that we need to get you out of the data collection job. I mean, we've got data. You need to be getting into the data. And that's where you need to be moving towards. And we need to get you out of the data collection. And so if in order to get you out of the data collection means that we've got to get funding so that we can pay somebody to do this, then that's what we need to do. And that should be a priority. What I do not want to put this paper on the back burner. I need this paper. We need to get this paper to a journal. I still want this paper out to a journal before you leave for Florida. Because if it's not, I mean, it's like at this time I may be working a little bit on two things, but it's like this paper, if at all possible, needs to get out as soon as possible so it's gone so that we can work on trying to find funding. Or put the paper away for a while. I cannot.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's like either we got to get this paper done or it's got to go away and sit back and not brought up, well, the paper didn't get done. You know, we've been working on it for so long. Yeah, but we had to put it aside to get some other stuff done.
I think that your scatter plots are going to help us make that decision.
Okay.
However, when Michelle says you can put them just one on the top and then one below, that you don't know that those are the same students.
The thing is that I color code them. And
yeah,
can...
I know, but I can't, I couldn't, yes, I know. And I think color coding is good. I'm just wondering if we need a simpler, instead of 9 colors, maybe 3. One for the folks. Well, let me ask you this first. Do you agree with me that the low folks, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the folks that are in quadrant 7, low on pre and low on post, should be of interest to instructors?
Yes.
Okay. Then I think they ought to have their own color.
Okay.
What about middle, and high?
We're not hurting them.
Right. And so I think that those two should have their own same color. See, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to get down the number of colors so that I can perceive it better. Then we have the students who are above, and there's 1, 2, oh, God.
Well, what, okay, you've taken care of 3, 5, and 7.
Right.
So now you've got 1, 2, and 4. Those are the ones that are in the upper left part. And
okay,
we've got those that are in the lower.
Paper here somewhere. Gosh darn it.
Well, right there we've moved them into 1, 2, 3, 4 colors. 9 down to 4.
1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So, yeah, okay. That would be great because then hopefully I'll be able to see. And you, but you don't have a problem with this, it's me, that I'll be able to see if the folks that have the extreme residuals are also, the extreme high residuals are in that top color batch, and the extreme low residuals are in the bottom color batch, and the low lows are in their color batch. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, your low low and your mid mid and high highs are typically, they're going to have small residuals.
That's what I would think. But
your left corner and your right corner are going to be your larger residuals.
That's what you would think. But I'm not sure that that's what the numbers were saying. That's what I gave up.
Okay.
And I'm also not sure that I understand what Michelle's talking about with the identity line and the residual line. But if you get those to me before Friday, I will look at them.
Okay.
You can lead me through it.
That doesn't mean I understand it.
No, no, no. I know, but...
I can lead you through what I have done. How's that?
Right. But you see, and the point is, I don't want any of this stuff in the paper. I just want to make sure that when we're talking about changers, they really are changers. And that's what the residuals should tell us.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to let you go because I know that Tom has something for you to do right now.
He does?
I don't know that.
Oh.
How is Tom?
Oh.
How is Tom?
Pardon?
How is Tom?
He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Is his ankle doing okay?
Oh, yeah, he hasn't had a problem with that at all.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, oh, boy, not as glad as we are, but thank you. And our weather has been, although it snowed, down the foothills, not quite to the top street above us this morning. We get two more storms coming in.
Oh, God.
We need the moisture desperately. We just desperately need the moisture. But it does make exercising somewhat of a problem if you need to go outside to do it or if you want to go to a swimming pool, because it's really hard to get, from us anyway, to get motivated, to be cold, to get in a pool, to get out of a pool, to be cold coming home.
Oh, I understand that. The swim team is practicing. They turn down the swim pool by, like, 3 degrees. Now, 3 degrees may not seem like a lot, feel it in the damn pool. You know, it's like... It's freezing when you first get in.
I know. 3 degrees is a lot in water temperature.
Oh, my God.
And they do that because, of course, they work up a sweat doing all their workouts. Let me ask you one more thing. I'm looking at your long email, and you said, could each of us list things that need to be done and then place priority numbers upon the items? Huh. Well, interesting. We both came up with priorities. Do we need to list things before we talk? Can I list things? I don't know.
I think so. I think that if I can, you know, if you're thinking that this, if X is a priority and I'm thinking Z is a priority and I'm working on Z and you think I should be working on X, that causes a problem.
Right. Or if I'm working on X and you're working on Z and we each think the other person is working on the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think... You know, one of the things, we just got so out of communication last semester because it was such a bitch for you, and I know that.
Never have another semester, I'm pleased that I survived that semester, and I'm pleased that not only did I survive it, I survived it well, in that I didn't have a nervous breakdown. I feel like I maintained my health throughout it. You know, mentally, I'm in good shape. But, you know, when I finished the semester, I did not... It just had a disappointing sense of that semester. I feel like I did one class well. And, you know, just nothing, that entire semester was just blecky. The only description, blecky. It was awful.
Well, your semester was yucky for me, too.
I
hadn't felt good since the beginning of October. Whether it was due to the infection in my root or what, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It was just bad. But it's over. And I get, just by the course difference, 7 hours each week. I am in the classroom 7 hours less from last semester to this semester.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's, you should not have that fast of a difference between your semesters.
I agree.
You shouldn't.
I agree.
So, I will tell you at this point we are go with the sabbatical. It
okay.
may just be the fall, but I'm not. I'm thinking that may be good.
That won't be good. I can tell you already. I've never talked to somebody who's had a one semester sabbatical who says it was good.
Really?
Oh yeah. You're just getting into the steam of things when it's over.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's one of the things on Friday we need to talk about. How much money do we need for your sabbatical? And how much money do we need to run the SAS data collection project?
Mm-hmm.
Because
if we could find funding for the other half of my salary, that would be great.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I think that this is something we really need to work out, or I mean, if you'll allow me to work with you on it, on what you say to your development person.
Mm-hmm.
You taught an extra course last semester. They
yeah.
ought to be able to do something for you about that. Maybe they won't, but it certainly doesn't hurt to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to be, if Monmouth wants to be the college, the post-secondary institution that houses the SATs, then they have to support it. And that means supporting you and supporting the data collection and the data analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about all of that on Friday.
Okay.
All righty. I better send Jean late already.
Yep. I will talk to you later.
Okay, well, thank you for talking to me. I'm really glad you participated in the call.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Candace.
Thank you. Please.